your way back to your seat. Good morning. My name is Heather. I'm one of the teaching pastors here at the park, and I'm excited today to introduce, kick off our next teaching series, which is something we've done for many years here. It's a series we call Story Formed, and it's an opportunity to focus on how to share our story through the lens of what God has done in our lives. So some of us in the past have heard that described as evangelism. You know, always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that lives within you, right? But we have a practice of learning how to tell our stories and sharing that with one another. And what's so great about this series is it's an opportunity not just to hear from the teaching pastors, it's also an opportunity to hear from broadly from members of our congregation. And every year we pray over who to make those invitations to, what theme God is laying on our hearts, and we're excited this month that every week when you come in July, you're going to get to hear from a family or a person within our community about what God's done in their lives. So our bottom line for this comes out of Revelation 12, and it's this. If we overcome evil by the blood of the Lamb, then we are called to testify to what God, Christ has done for us. This testimony is evident in both word and deed for the glory of God and the hope of the world. That doesn't have to be fancy. It's just us saying, this is what I've experienced. Because every follower of Jesus has a story, and we want to highlight that. We also want to equip you to tell your story. So we have some tools and resources on our website that outline, first of all, four movements in how to tell your story. And we craft it in this way. There's four movements. First, you tell the story of your beginning, which mirrors creation. Then you tell the story of your brokenness, which mirrors the fall. Then you talk about redemption, how Jesus changed everything in your life. And lastly, you speak to the restoration. What's the ongoing work? What's God calling you into? And we have set up so many examples of this from within our community. We created a resource this year on our website where many members of our community have already written out their stories to share with you all. And it's up on thepark.org. And parksa.org. And if you scan this QR code, you can pull up dozens of stories from members of our community that are fascinating to read. I encourage you to take time this month to maybe read a couple a week and pray through them or see what God, you can use that as a devotional, use it as a way to learn about what God's doing in the lives of people in our community. And we want to further invite you to share your story. So if your story isn't up there yet, there's a link at the top that says, tell your story. And I know everybody is excited to go home today and prayerfully think about how to write out your story and then send it to us so it can be posted on this website. No, we're serious. We want you to do this. So we're going to keep asking you to do it and encourage you to write your story down and share it with others this month. So as leaders, one aspect of leadership is just going first, right? Like being the first one to do something. And so I'm going to go first and share with you one of my stories. So the great part about being in your 40s is when I talk about what God's doing in my life, I'm like, which time? Like, what story am I going to tell? This month, as we were thinking about our theme for Story Formed, we talked about this idea of legacy. The legacy of faith, thinking about the cloud of witnesses who have passed the faith on to us, and then who are we carrying that legacy forward to in our next generation of sharing our faith. And that brought to mind for me this guy from my home church growing up. So from the time I was 14, this guy called me Missionary Heather. His name was George. He was an older member of my home church in small town Ohio, and he loved missions. And he was actively involved in anything our church was doing related to missions. In the early 90s, when our church started making plans to take our church's teens on our first ever youth service mission trip to the hills of Kentucky, George said, I'm in. At the time, I thought he was really old. Turns out he was like 62. So that was like, I was like, I can't even believe you can go on trips when you're 62. That's what I thought when I was a teenager. I don't think that now. He drove his old pickup truck packed full of suitcases and sleeping bags, and he helped us all week painting and repairing houses. He was Jesus' hands and feet, and our youth group gave him the nickname Missionary George. And so from then on, anytime we saw it, we're like, hello, Missionary George. And he would reply to me, hello, Missionary Heather. Every single week, week after week after week, hello, Missionary Heather. half a dozen more mission trips, but every Sunday at church, he called me by that name. And when I graduated high school, he bought me a wrapped gift to my graduation party. It was a brand new tool belt, which I just found in the garage yesterday. This symbol of a minister launching out to do God's work. So a few years later, I did become a missionary. I raised funds in Ohio and moved 2,500 miles from home to work in a teen outreach ministry in Washington State. He was one of the first people to sign up on my financial support team, and he was a faithful supporter until he passed away in 2007. So he didn't live long enough to see me become a church minister, to be ordained, but he was maybe one of the first people who called out and recognized in me that I was a minister. So we have a lot, connecting to like the idea of fall, we have a lot of churches in the U.S. and our own city who still don't recognize women as pastors and ministers. I've bumped into a lot of them in 20 years of ministry, and their barbs, the words, the mean things that they said, they still sting. And it slowed my journey from getting to where I wanted to go, jobs I couldn't apply for because they had male pronouns in the job description, or being in job interviews when somebody said, "Are you sure this isn't going to be too much for you?" Or that sermon was good, but it was a lot of mom, like a lot of mom came out in that. And it's painful to hear that kind of rejection when you know that God has called you to something. So it reminds me in 1 Samuel 16, the prophet Samuel looked among Jesse's sons to find the Lord's chosen one to lead Israel. He looked to Jesse's oldest son, Eliab, thinking his height and appearance made him the Lord's chosen one. Look at this guy. He's tall. He's a leader. And the Lord quickly tells Samuel, "Have no regard for his appearance or stature because I haven't selected him." God doesn't look at things like humans do. Humans see only what is visible to the eyes, but the Lord sees into the heart. The called one of God was the kid who was out tending the sheep who no one even invited to the future king selection party. So when God called me into ministry, he called me at a heart level to teach his word and to sow ministries in new places and new spaces, to be a missionary from Ohio to Washington to San Antonio. And I've been able to serve in these roles because of a strong rootedness that it was God who called me here. I would have never been able to stand up to the pressure if God hadn't called me here. And my growth in it's also been bolstered by a legacy of many, many men who recognized that call, told me they saw it, and made room for it, who invited me into leadership. So now I'm asking the Holy Spirit to help me be an advocate in a couple ways. First of all, in encouraging other pastors that I know to make room for more women in pastoral leadership, and also in God calling me to disciple other women who are called to lead. So this morning, as we're discussing legacy, I want you to begin to think about those people in your life, the missionary George type people in your life who invested in you, who taught your classes, who spent time with you, who taught you the scriptures. And then think about who God's calling you, assigning to you to invest in with the next generation. All right, so let me pray for our time together, and then I'm going to invite up some members of our congregation to share. God, we thank you that we get to be together here and share your story through our story. And I want to invite your spirit to be present and with us today as we continue. In Jesus' name. So I'm now going to invite up Jeremy and Sarah McCowan, who are going to come and share a little bit with us.
Woohoo! Give it up for them. Hello.
Hello.
Jeremy and Sarah, can you introduce yourselves to us and tell us how long you've been at the park and how you got here? Go ahead.
I'm Jeremy McCowan. We came to the park about a year ago, give or take. And I think we originally found out about the park through a connection with Scott, as most people. I've been introduced. We lived in Kingwood before we moved to San Antonio, and somebody in Kingwood knew of Scott and introduced me whenever we moved to San Antonio. And so that's how I heard about the park originally, and we came about a year ago.
So we're talking about this theme about legacy and telling our story. And I know y'all have spent a lot of time thinking and praying about this question. And thinking about how and what to share. And so I'm just going to ask this question so the congregation knows what we were talking about. Thinking about legacy, tell us your story and keeping in mind who were the people who invested the seeds of faith in you and how did they pass the faith to you?
So that particular question, interestingly enough, I kind of set the tone for like the full story that we want to share today, but specifically, I thought about when you were talking just now, I wouldn't say their names, Ray and Melba Henry, at Sabinal First Baptist Church. They were the first people when I was a teenager growing up in a little small town, Sabinal, that invited me into life, like into ministry and life. And they invited me to church camp. They invited me to the Billy Graham Crusade. They invited me. They were the ones that really set the tone for inviting, for this, like the image of invitation and welcoming in my life, that I started, because a big theme of our life, a lot of what we've learned and kind of our legacy is kind of revolving around hospitality and care and welcoming. And, those people just came to mind when you were talking a moment ago.
I would say it was my mom. She, just growing up, she always was the one that was like, I mean, we went to a lot of different churches. I saw a lot of different things, but she was definitely the one in my life that was pushing us to go to church and have a relationship with the Lord. Yeah, so.
Yeah, and
If you would, go ahead and share with us more about your story, about what God's done in your life.
So I grew up on a legacy ranch, a historical legacy ranch in Concan. When I mean by legacy, it's interesting. I think that's why one of the reasons Heather reached out. It's been in our family. It's been run by the same family since 1889. And it's been passed down from generation to generation, same family, still owned and operated. And I grew up there, so in Concan, on a ranch, as an only child, and was baptized in First Baptist Church, Sabinal, when I was a sophomore in high school, and that's when I really started following Jesus. And along that journey, learning from these people, just, and it wasn't like Ray and Melba Henry come to mind, but there's also some other people in the church that I can remember that just as a teenager, as a sophomore in high school, that just welcomed me. And that really started stirring this passion and this zeal for mission in me, like this vision. I went on a mission trip to Mexico one spring break, and that really sparked in me a vision for mission and the nations. And so I went to school, studied missiology, got a degree, a bachelor's of arts in theology of mission, and had the vision to go take over the world for Jesus, and graduated and moved back home to Concan after graduation, instead of taking over the world for Jesus, actually came on staff as an associate pastor at a little bitty church in Utopia, Texas. So God in his providence led me to Utopia, and that's where I actually met Sarah.
And I grew up in Uvalde, a little small town, and went to Texas Tech. And while I was there, I had strayed really far from the Lord. I would say, you know, I don't even know that I actually had a relationship with the Lord before I even went. I mean, we went to church. My mom had talked a lot about it, but I'd never really known what it was like to have a relationship with the Lord. And I had strayed very far. And she would just call me up, like, on a weekly basis, like, get to church, get to know the Lord. And that is where I started pressing in. The Lord really met me during that time, and I decided to move home. And my family was actually attending the church that Jeremy was the associate pastor at. So that's where we met.
So meeting at a small church in Utopia, Texas, 3 years into marriage, this is where I think our story really starts. When you originally asked us to do this, you know, it's easy to think, okay, what's my story? What's my legacy? Who are the people that influenced my life? And then, of course, Heather's like, hey, why don't both of y'all do this? And Sarah's like, okay, well, how do we do this together? And I think this was a season of life for us, like learning to be newlyweds, we're newly married, I'm a pastor, we're learning how to live life of ministry together. 3 years in is where things started to shift for us. Our oldest daughter, Sophia, She was born in September of that year, and in October, I had recently, prior a few months prior to that, been terminated from my job as a pastor. So I experienced the pain and the confusion and the frustration of thinking this was life and ministry and life in a church context, and I was essentially fired. And that really started this kind of swirling spiral for us as a family. Like, in some ways, it opened up like, oh, we don't have to live in utopia all of our lives. Like, there's other places in the world. But in other ways, they're like, whoa, I thought this was, there's some stability here. And now everything kind of became unstable. So when you're in that state of life, what better thing to do than to pack up your one-month-old daughter and move to Houston to help plant a church? That seems wise, right? So, well, that's what we did. We packed up our lives, packed up Sophia. She was a one-month-old baby, and we moved to Houston to help plant a church. And it just became kind of this disorienting season of life for us. I just recently, like while we were in Utopia, I worked on my master's degree in counseling. And so the Lord was kind of leading me into this counseling vision for counseling ministry. So I started knocking on doors all around the city of Houston, trying to figure out how to get into counseling, working as many odd jobs as I could just to pay the bills. We were living in an apartment, like the shoebox size apartment, garage apartment in the heart of Houston, all the while being a pastor and an elder of a church plant. And on top of that, like, so you have the confusion, the still wrestling with the disorientation of being let go from my church job, how to live in a hectic, fast-paced, large city, how to be a pastor, how to be a dad, how to be a husband, all of that swirling. In the midst of all of that, the church plan we were part of, the leadership culture was pretty toxic, and there wasn't real true vulnerability and humility in the leadership culture. And there was just a lot of mess going on. And so I think for us during that season of life, we felt pretty detached. We were holding on to threads of hope, like, hey, we know we're here with purpose. We know we're here, that Jesus has called us to Houston, and we know we have reason for here, but there's like this thread of hope that I think we can make this, I think we can do this, but really we were just pretty detached at large.
I just felt like I was trying to be a mom. I was the first, you know, time, and she was 1 month old, and we had just left our family. And so I look back on this time, and it was actually one of the sweetest times. I feel like God really used Sophia as my saving grace during that time. I wanted out of my situation. I remember those times probably being some of the darkest times of our life. And I wanted to run, and I was good at running. So I look back on that time, and I look at how he used her to really ground me and keep me. And it's so amazing to be in a situation like that, where when you're in the moment, like, you're so focused in on what is actually happening right there in that situation. And then you get all these years past it, and you get to look back and see how God was just working every little detail out for your future self, you know? And so when I look back at those times, I am like, gosh, he was doing so many things in our life during that time so that we could get to where we are now. And had we not experienced those things, our life would be on a totally different path. So it was so unbelievably hard, but now I look back and I am so thankful for those times.
Yeah. And I would say, like, that season of life, like she said, although it was one of, if not the darkest season of life for us, it was also the most formative. And I think that we're always in a state of transformation or formation, like the potter and the clay. The potter's always forming and shaping us throughout life, but there's particular moments of life that I think there's a little bit more pressure put upon us, you know, to He puts a little bit more pressure. And that was one of those seasons of life for us, that it was dark, it was challenging, it was confusing, disorienting. But the faithful hand of the potter was putting his loving hand on us and pressuring us and forming us. And that's what, to Sarah's point, we look, though the church plan we were part of, there was toxic leadership. We were trying to figure out, like it was, all of this was like learning phase of life for us. While I was knocking on counseling doors around the city of Houston, God graciously led me to a guy who founded a ministry called Better Days that actually provides care and counseling for church leaders, pastors and church leaders. And so in that season of life, I finally get out of all the working all the odd jobs and step into what I think those spaces like missionary Heather finally gets this moment to live into this call of mission. Like I stepped into what I really believe the Lord had shaped and formed me to be, this counseling, this pastor, this caring person, and all the while learning hospitality in the midst of that. But when I came on board with Better Days, I'm watching the church that we had come to plant implode. And not just the church itself, but the leaders, their lives were imploding. And you see God's timing is always on time. And it all seemed to fit together. And so unhealthy leadership was hitting a fever pitch in the church plant we were part of. And the wake of that ended up closing the doors. All the while I'm coming on board of a church, a ministry that provides care and counsel and safe space and refuge for those who are in ministry. And it all started in that season for me, like kind of shaping this vision of inviting people, being hospitable, to be opening spaces of care for people, because that's ultimately what counseling is being a safe space for people to come and be cared for. So I think seeing that and recognizing that being in ministry and being a pastor is and can be a very isolating experience, a very lonely job, a very lonely vocation at times. And beyond that, being a pastor or ministry or church leader's family can be even more isolating and more lonely than being the actual minister. So being able to see that and experience that personally from us, and like God developing that when us stepping into a ministry, really provided space for me personally to start living into that call of hospitality. At that same time, we left the heart of Houston, downtown Houston, and we moved to beautiful Kingwood. And that's where the Lord put us, in a community, which I think this is where we really started to learn and grow and be formed by God in this vision of hospitality and care in this church community that we were part of.
So while all those great things were swirling in Jeremy, I was like, no thanks. I was pretty much done with the church. I really did not want to go back, if I'm being really honest. He's like, Kingwood, it's a great place. We have this whole community waiting for us. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't want to go. So we moved up there, and I will use the word forced back into community, because right before we left to go to Kingwood, I found out I was pregnant with our second child, Newton, and we get there, and I was put on bed rest almost within 2 months of being there. And we had gone to the church a couple times that they were, you know, kind of, so Better Days was also a part of this church community in Kingwood. That's how they're all connected. And I can even, and she is like one of my best friends now, but she's like, I knew you didn't want to be my friend. And all of a sudden I am on bed rest and I cannot leave the house, can't get out of bed. And these people just start coming over. And before you know it, they have a meal brought to us at least 3 days a week. And I think it was for like 5 months they brought a meal 3 days a week. Women would show up at the house just to hang out. I mean, I was lonely. Like, anyone had to lay in bed that long? It was not fun. So they would just come over and they would bring meals and they would hang out and they would talk with me and they would watch Sophia for me. They would whatever, hang out with our family. And it was like impossible to not love them. They loved us so well. It was impossible to be like, you know, I don't want any part of this. They set up a laptop and videoed their sermons, which they had never done, but they did it for me. Like, I was the only person sitting at home watching these sermons. They just loved us so well. And I think through all of that, it just opened my eyes to how we are called to live. It changed my mind on what church was all about and who we are supposed to be. It changed my hard heart, and it made me realize, you know, we all are going to go in and out of things, but just how we are to live and who we are called to be as Christian and the body of believers. So, it was a transforming time for me for sure.
Yeah. And in that community, we were learning to be welcomed. I mean, that is part of her journey and mine, but in that, like, learning to be welcomed by somebody, like, I don't really want to, but they're inviting you. No, I'm coming. I'm being welcomed. There's a verse, Romans 15:7 says, welcome each other as Christ has welcomed you. We were experiencing being welcomed by Jesus and by others, at the same time, learning to welcome and be hospitable and opening our home to people has always been a part of our journey, which is interesting because, you know, growing up as an only child on a ranch in the middle of nowhere, away from here, like, that was not part of my story. We didn't have people over to the house all the time, but that was part of our story. And so we were inviting people in our home, having dinners, but we had this is where the Lord, I think, really started to stir the bigger vision of hospitality for us. We had an extra bedroom in our home. And of course, with my mission background and connections we had, we're like, oh, we're gonna host missionaries. It'll be a safe place for them to stay, safe place for them to come and rest. You know, if they need an extra room, like, we'll just invite people in. And we started kind of toying with that idea and exploring that. And the more we explored that, we unexpectedly stumbled into foster care. The Lord, Jesus had other ideas of hospitality for us. We're like, we're going to host missionaries. Instead, we started opening our home up to children who needed a home and families that needed a home. And that's where this vision for hospitality, I think, really started to open up for us. And thankfully, so grateful because we were able to adopt Amaya through that. And we now have 3 kiddos because of that. And it was that journey for us was really learning what hospitality, like, in a welcoming sense, is, because you are just open. Your home is open. It's not like you're picking and choosing. Oh, I like those missionaries and they just need a safe place to sleep for a day. Like, no, it's like, hey, this kid needs a home, and with this kid's going to come a CASA worker, going to come all the other. Who else? Like, you got the CPS showing up. You got whoever showing up. You got your, like, and you don't know when they're going to leave, and you don't know what all the baggage they're coming with. And so it really, that really opened up for us this vision of bigger hospitality.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, with foster care, we had no idea what we were getting into when we started it. And we realized that, all of the work that had been being done before, like, Christ was just laying the foundation for what was to come. And he was weaving into the comfort of our lives this hospitality mentality so that we could handle being foster parents. I remember, with each child, like, we had CPS, CASA, attorneys, adoption agencies, caseworkers, investigators that would come with each one of these. And I remember one day we were just like, just leave the door unlocked. Like, anyone is welcome. come on in. I mean, there were days like I would show up and I'd be like, I didn't know I had a meeting today, but come on in. You know, like I had the kids were running around with no shoes on. Okay, no worries. Like, I don't know. This is just what our life looks like for now. And it kind of sounds like, you know, a great idea to just live that way. But it was hard. It was so hard. It was not easy. It didn't look pretty. You know, my idea of like hospitality and what I wanted it to look like, it was not looking like that. But it was, you know, during that time, Christ just showing me that it's not about it looking pretty. It's not about it looking a certain way, but it was about truly welcoming people and all different types of people. And sometimes that's not, doesn't always look real pretty and it's not always real easy, but that's who we are called to be. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing your story. It's beautiful. I think as we're talking, like the threads of like the thing that God brings you through ends up, it's not all shiny, but God equips you to minister in a new way after the hard seasons. And your story really testifies to God's goodness at work in the hard times to create this healing, hospitable space for others. And so that was all stuff that's in the past. I'd love for you to share more thinking now about your own legacy. How are you carrying your legacy of faith forward in your family and ministry in the next season?
I'm so glad you asked that question.
Great. I didn't prep you at all.
I have a response for that. The verse, Romans 15, welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you, that kind of unintendedly became the foundation for us. Because when I look back at the legacy, it is that he has welcomed us. Like, that is the reason we are who we are. That is the reason we do what we do, is because we have been welcomed by Jesus. And in being welcomed by him, he's extended his rest. He's extended his comfort. He's extended his care. He's extended his love, his compassion, all of who he is, he's extended to us and invited us into that. And that's the foundation of our response, is to be that for others. And I think that looking for, as we move forward in life, it really is wanting people to experience the hospitality of Jesus. So no matter what privileges we have, what resources we have, what gifts and talents we have, whatever you want to call the good things that God has given you in life, to look at those things, which like we did with this empty room in our home, to look at those things and just say, how can this help people experience the hospitality of Jesus, the welcoming of Jesus with those good things. Mm-hmm. Is that it?
Okay. Well, never yet. I mean, you know, we're talking about.
Okay.
You want me to?
I thought you had.
This?
No, I didn't know if you had.
I feel like you said it.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Okay. That's yeah. Well. So the big. So, I thought she had space for. Anyway, that that's good. So. Come full circle to why we're in San Antonio and not Houston. We didn't leave Houston just because there's lots of mosquitoes and it's really humid and there's lots of traffic. That was part of it.
Those are all good reasons
to leave. And they're like, we're thankful that we left those things. But we primarily moved to San Antonio to get closer to the ranch, our family ranch, because it's our heritage. No matter where we go in the world, that's going to be a part of our story. It currently is. It will be as long as until I don't even know when. But that's, so through that, to thinking about the resources and the things God has given us, that is something the Lord has given us. It's part of our story, part of our heritage. So we've been wanting to use that space in this vision of hospitality. So we've been on this journey. We started a journey, it started years ago, but really when we moved to San Antonio about 4 or 5 years ago, of starting a retreat center on the ranch. And the vision of the retreat center is to use a resource to have a space for people to come and experience the hospitality of Jesus. Like, that's the simple vision of it, simple version of it. But really, we want to care for those who are caring for others. We want those, whether it's pastors, ministry leaders, missionaries, nurses, doctor, people that are giving their lives for others, we want them to experience a space where they can be cared for and served. And I think about the passing it on, the vision there's always like when you think about legacy and you think about, hey, this is something the Lord has given me and I want to pass this on to somebody else. Typically when we have a very tangible thing in the ranch. Like there's a ranch that's been passed on from generation to generation and we're going to pass it on to our kids. Like there's going to be their responsibility one day, Sophia. That's something tangible. But when we think about the retreat center and this vision of our lives and what we want to do, they may or may not run a retreat center. They may or may not do something on the ranch. But what we hope is that our children will inherit from us and receive from us a vision of opening their lives up wherever they are, in whatever context they're in, whatever resources they have, wherever they are, opening their lives up to other people and saying, my life is here, because that's what Jesus has done for us. Mm-hmm. My life for your life. And really, that's our hope, just with the vision of the ranch, with the vision of all that we do, is that people would experience Jesus's hospitality.
Yeah, that's amazing. Awesome. Well, Jeremy and Sarah, thank you for sharing your story with us. Let me pray this theme over us as a congregation. God, we thank you for this word, this vision of hospitality. We thank you for the legacy of faith that's handed down to us by others. God, we pray as a hospitable people that you will increase our capacity by the power of your Spirit to open our hearts, our lives, our spaces to others. Help us to make room in our hearts for people that love you, for people that are far from you, and help us to bring your love and light and peace to them. In Jesus' name.
You stand as we sing.